You know, I've always been a little scared of these things. Ever since I saw my first electrocution. Afraid somebody get thinking I was too long-winded and just zap me. But I am delighted to be with you. And it is a joy to be back in this part of the country. And I've already been warned not to tell what I know about certain people. Because there is much to tell, especially about that fellow that just led the prayer. But I'm glad that he mentioned one of the most valuable commodities in this world, and that is grandchildren. I now know what my dad meant when he said, if I'd known they was this good, I'd have had them first. I have two granddaughters and a brand new grandson. The grandson's over here in Madison, Alabama. He just came along in February, and he already tells me what to do. That's okay. They are allowed. But it is a thrill to watch my sons go through what I went through. And in fact, my middle son, Will, paid me a compliment a while back. He said, Dad, you were right. I said, no, it wasn't a matter of I was right. I knew what was right. And he said, well, it's beginning to make sense. And I said, I understand that. And that's the reason this morning at the Sunday school hour, and then especially during the worship hour, I want to talk about a concept that I think sadly is missing in our society. If you have your Bibles, turn with me to Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. And it's the last two verses of the chapter, verses 31 and 32. The Apostle Paul says, let all bitterness and wrath and anger and clamor and evil speaking be put away from you with all malice. And be ye kind one to another. Tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God, for Christ's sake, hath forgiven you. I'm not a pessimist by nature. I try not to be. I try to keep my balance. You work in the court system, and the criminal justice system, it can taint your attitude toward people. I tell folks all the time, in juvenile court, I set my record the other day. I locked up a 5-year-old. I'm dead serious. Parents dropped off a 5-year-old at the emergency room and left him unattended. They started running tests on him. He had heroin in his system. I had to take him into protective custody, get DHR involved, foster parents involved, because 5-year-old got a hold of heroin. I had an 8-year-old on crystal meth. I've helped send 5 teenagers to death row. They are awaiting execution as we speak. Now, why'd I tell you all that garbage? Because that's what's out there. That's what's out there. That's the reality of this sin-sick world that we live in. That's why this particular lesson, I think, is more appropriate than it's ever been. Because the power of kindness is missing. Sadly, in our homes, our schools, our nation, and would you believe it? Even in the church. And that's why this morning at the worship hour, I'm going to talk about Jesus, the friend of sinners. Conversely, would you imagine with me this morning a world that lived by Ephesians 4:32? Can you imagine? A world that lived by Ephesians 4 and verse 32. I read it again. And be ye kind one to another, tenderhearted, forgiving one another, even as God for Christ's sake hath forgiven you. I tell you one thing, if the world lived by that, I would not have a job as a prosecutor for the state of Alabama. Wouldn't have much need for law enforcement, would we? Might not even have much need for the military if everybody lived that way. So let me ask you a question this morning. Don't raise your hand, and don't point at your spouse. But do you fit this verse? Do you consider yourself kind? Thoughtful? You know, it's so easy to give ourselves the benefit of the doubt. But then, if you ever hear your voice on tape or see a video of yourself, what's your first reaction? You ever heard your voice on tape? And what was your reaction? That's not me! That's not me! Yeah, it is. I tell folks in counseling all the time that 60% of what we communicate is tone of voice. 30% is our body language. That only leaves about 5 or 10% for words. But 60% of what you communicate is your tone of voice! Now, what did I just communicate to you? Anger. This is why sociologists and psychologists tell us that unborn children can perceive whether or not they are really wanted by the tone of voice their mother uses while the child is in the womb. It's that important, it's that serious, that we come to grips that in the church, and I've said this, and I keep saying it, and I'm going to keep saying it until the Lord takes me on, and that is that the church of my Lord is not a museum of perfect people. The church of my Lord is a hospital for hurting people. And that's why nowhere in the world should this verse be more applicable than in the church. And I say again, we have a self-perception of ourselves until we see ourselves on tape or hear ourselves on tape. It's kind of like a kid that came home from school one day and he said, "Mama, Mama, guess what? I'm the best-looking kid in my class." She said, "Wonderful, baby. Who told you?" He said, "Nobody. I just looked around." Well, that's kind of the way we are. "I'm kind." Well, who told you that? "Nobody. I just looked around." And so do the people who know you the best and love you the most consider you kind and thoughtful and considerate? Your spouse, your children, your neighbors, the people with whom you work. Maybe you're in a social club or a civic club. Do they consider? And then the church. So what I want to do this morning is basically three things. Number one, we're going to define kindness. And then number two, we're going to answer the question, why be kind? And then number three, we're going to talk about some ways to implement kindness. All right? So what is it? What is kindness? Well, I can tell you what Webster says in his dictionary. He says, quote, "It is a good, benevolent disposition or nature." Synonyms such as helpfulness, to be sympathetic, loving, courteous. End quote. The poet says that kindness is the key to all barred hearts. Well, what does the Bible say? In 1 Corinthians 13 and verse 4, the Bible says that love is patient and love is kind. Now, he's not saying they're the same thing. You have to read that carefully. He says love is patient and love is kind, meaning that patience and kindness is a characteristic of love. I love the Old Testament passage that says the loving kindness of the Lord endures forever. That's a Hebrew word, kesed. It's translated loving kindness. Sometimes translated mercy. Sometimes it's translated kindness, but in many cases it's that one word, loving kindness. I read a story about a little boy in Sunday school. And the teacher asked him, said, "What is loving kindness?" And he thought for a second and he said, "Kindness is when my mama makes me a peanut butter sandwich. Loving kindness is when she puts jelly on it." Well, I don't know that I can improve on that. That's what loving kindness is. I don't think he's far off. And so Webster's definition is not too far off either. A good, benevolent disposition or nature. Now, second question. Why should we be kind? Why should we be kind? Very quickly, I want to give you six reasons as to why we ought to be kind. Number one, in Luke 6 and verse 35, we ought to be kind in order to be like God. In order to be like God. Jesus said something that we struggle with. He said, love your enemies. Love your enemies. Am I the only one in the room that gives me problems? Am I the only one in the room that ain't got that figured out yet? Love your enemies. It goes against our nature, doesn't it? But in order to be like God, we are to love our enemies, because what kind of God is God? Well, He is a God who is kind to the wicked. He's kind to those that don't deserve it. Hold your finger at Luke 6 and go back to the Old Testament book of Nehemiah. And listen to this from Nehemiah 9 and verse 17. He's talking about the children of Israel and how they and their fathers dealt proudly and hardened their necks and hardened not to thy commandments and refused to obey. Verse 17. Neither were mindful of thy wonders that thou didst among them, but hardened thy necks in their rebellion, appointed a captain to return to thy bondage. But thou art a God ready to pardon. Watch it now. Gracious and merciful, slow to anger, and of great kindness. There it is. And forsookest them not. So what kind of God do we serve? Do we serve a God that's kind to us even when we don't deserve that kindness? Is that the kind of God we serve? Do your head like this so I know you're awake. Okay. Yeah, that's the kind of God we serve. And the point is, if you had never known anything about Jesus, you have still experienced God's kindness. The air that you breathe, the clothes you wear, the homes in which you live, the beauty of the earth, the food that we have to eat, it's all a gift by way of the nature of God. And so the first reason I need to be kind is in order to be like God. Second reason to be kind, and that is in order to please God. Now, folks, kindness is not one of them virtues that I can accept or deny. I get kind of irritated when I hear people talking about certain terminology in Scripture. They put an S on the last book in the Bible. What's the last book in the Bible? Revelation. There ain't no S to it. It's not the Revelations. It's Revelation. We do the same thing with Galatians 5 and verse 22. We refer to that as the fruit of the Spirit. Now, some folks want to put an S in there and talk about the fruits of the Spirit. Ain't no fruits to it. It's the fruit of the Spirit. It's all one package. It's all one deal. It's not a bunch of separate things. And in Galatians 5 and verse 22, the Apostle Paul gives a list with regard to the fruit of the Spirit. And notice what he says. Love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, faith, meekness, temperance. Against such there is no law. See, it's all one package. When you put all of that together, love, joy, peace, long-suffering, gentleness, goodness, and faith. The Apostle Peter does the same thing in 2 Peter 1. In essence, saying this ought to be second nature to us. And so I need to be God, or to be kind, in order to be like God, and in order to please God. Now then, let me give you a third reason we ought to be kind. For the good influence that we could have on other people. Let that soak in for a second. We ought to be kind because of the good influence that we could have on other people. The Apostle Paul was writing to a young preacher named Timothy. And evidently, Timothy struggled with timidity. That's an easy way for you to remember that. Timothy, timidity. And Paul says a lot to try to strengthen him and bolster him, if you will. And he says in 2 Timothy 2 and verse 24, that the servant of the Lord must not strive, King James Version says. The word means argumentative. Well, now, I'm a lawyer, and I argue for a living. I was in court the other day, and the judge looked at me and the defense lawyer and said, "Are the lawyers ready to argue?" And I stood up, and I said, "You betcha. Let's do it." My daddy said, when I was a little boy, I'd argue with a telephone pole. I said, "Yeah, and win, too." Well, that's not a compliment to a child of God. Paul's saying that a child of God is not argumentative. Now, hold on right here. Hold on. Does that mean we're not to stand up and defend and earnestly contend for the faith once and for all delivered to the saints? Is that what that's saying? Uh-uh. No. But we are not to be argumentative. I am afraid that we have closed some doors to people in the community and with whom we work. We have closed some doors because we weren't kind to them. We were so concerned about winning the argument, we lost the person. We were so concerned about getting them told, setting them straight, but we did so in such a way we lost the war. And we lost an opportunity. And so we ought to be kind for the good influence that we can have. Why is it, and we're going to talk about this in the worship hour, why is it Jesus associated with sinners? I'm going to answer that at the worship hour, because in Luke 15, he's criticized for keeping company with sinners. And so we weigh this in the balance. Be ye not unequally yoked with unbelievers. Evil companions corrupt good morals. In juvenile court tomorrow, when I put some kids on probation, I give them a list of no contacts. Call it a no contact provision. These are other kids you can't hang out with. You can't talk with them. You can't text them. You can't send them emails. You can't send a third party to talk to them. No contact means no contact. And so there's that one side of balancing our stability. The other side of that is, wait a minute, how are we going to ever lead anybody to Christ? Well, Paul answers that. He said, don't be unequally yoked. And yet at the same time, we can be kind to other people because of that influence that we can have. Because tragically, I say again, we've closed some doors that are never going to be open again because we just simply weren't kind. Number four, we ought to be kind because of the inward glow it leaves in our heart. You ever done a good deed? Maybe made a hospital visit or went to pay your respects at a funeral home. And when you left there, you felt better.
Never shall forget, I was in graduate school at Harding Grad in Memphis, Tennessee. It was not long before we moved to Bethel. And I left class, and I was headed back home to North Mississippi, and I stopped at a little grocery store there in Mississippi, and it was a cold, rainy, miserable night. That wind was coming in out of Arkansas, coming across the Mississippi River, and it was just nasty. And I got out of my car, and I walked into the grocery store, and I saw a little boy standing there outside the door, 5 years old, if I'm able to judge his age. And as I walked by, I thought, well, his mom and dad are in the grocery store. He's waiting on them. And so I went in and picked up what I needed, and I walked out, and he's still standing there. And I spoke to him. I said, little buddy, you okay? Because he's cold, it's raining. And he's just, I said, are you okay? And he said, well, my daddy gave me $5 to go to the store to get some milk and some bread, and I've lost my $5. And I said, well, partner, you just need to go back home and explain it to your daddy. I'm sure he'll understand. And he shook his head. He said, no, sir. No, sir. He said, daddy's been drinking. And I know what will happen. I'll tell him and he'll start in on me. And then mama will try to stop him and he'll start in on her. He said, no, sir, I can't go home. I can't go home. Well, I looked in my pocket. I had one $5 bill. I said, come on. And we went in the grocery store, and I bought him exactly what he enumerated. In fact, he still had his little list. And gave him exact change from that $5 bill. And I said, now I'm going to stand right here, and I'm going to watch you until you get safely to your house. And he turned and looked at me with the eyes of an angel. He said, mister, I sure appreciate this. I won't ever forget this. Well, I don't know if he forgot it or not. But I sure did. And I made my Lord a promise right then. That he would, if he would give me the strength, I wanted to devote my life to helping kids who've lost their way and they're too scared to go home. All because of a little incident that happened on a rainy, stormy, cold winter night in Memphis, Tennessee. And I'm aware of the fact that I'm probably standing in front of some people that have a similar story. Of something that you did just for the sake of being kind. And invariably, you feel better afterwards. Now then, number five, and closely akin to it. We ought to be kind because it's going to come back to us. A lot of times we use Galatians 6 and verse 7 as a threat. Whatsoever a man soweth, that shall he also reap. Well, you reap to the flesh, or sow to the flesh, rather, you're going to reap rotten flesh, corruption, carrion, which buzzards love. But do you know what? That is also a positive thing as well. Because Paul said, you sow to the Spirit, you're going to reap life everlasting. And I would add this morning that it's true of kindness as well. And if anybody ought to be kind, it ought to be us. Because you reap what you sow. It's kind of like a boomerang. You throw it and it comes back to you. And I'm aware of the fact that you meet some people and they meet this world with a sneer and a snarl. And I understand that the world is often unkind. But you ever notice that verse in Proverbs in chapter 18 and verse 24 that says, a man who hath friends must show himself friendly. You wonder why you ain't got no friends? I can remember working in funeral service in Nashville in the 70s, and we'd be making arrangements for a family, and we would get to enumerating pallbearers. and they couldn't come up with six. They couldn't come up with six friends or six family members to be a pallbearer for the one that had passed away. That's a sad commentary on somebody's life. And that's why I tell folks all the time, I do not try to be morbid, but you and I need to live our lives in such a way as to wonder, what are they going to be saying about me when they pull out of that cemetery after they buried me? What are they going to be saying about me? I tell you, he was the meanest, ornerest old cuss. Thank God and Greyhound, he's gone. Is that what they're going to be saying about us? If we're not kind, that's exactly what they're going to be saying about us. That, oh, well, you never could please him. All he did was criticize and gripe. You never could please him. No. No. We're kind because it's going to come back to us. And I will say this to this church in all kindness. The sin that every church denies. Are you listening? The sin that every church denies is the sin of unfriendliness. And if you catch yourself only speaking to the same people every service, then there's a problem. I was at a congregation to hold a meeting one time. And I get there Sunday morning a little early, kind of like I did now. And I don't know anybody. I don't know a soul. And I'm the hot shot. You know, I'm the visiting preacher. And I walk in the back, and there's several folks standing around, not a soul spoke. They didn't shake my hand, nothing. A few folks in the auditorium, I walk in, nobody speaks. There's a fellow sitting right up here on the front row. I assume he's the song leader. And I walk in and sit down here. He gets up and moves over. I thought, is it me? And I told one of the elders later, don't you ever let that happen to a visitor. I'm not going to quit the church because of that. But there are some people who will not come back because of that. We only get one shot at them sometimes. And I say again, it is the sin that every church denies. Because what we mean is, we're friendly to each other. We're kind to each other. And so it's going to come back to us. Kindness is. Now then, number six and finally, kindness is necessary because we may lose the opportunity. We may lose the opportunity. 14th chapter of the Gospel of Mark is a powerful, powerful situation. You remember the story. Being in Bethany in the house of Simon the leper, as he sat at meat, there came a woman having an alabaster box of ointment of spikenard, very precious, and she broke the box and poured it on his head. And there were some that had indignation within themselves and said, why was this waste of the ointment made? It might have been sold for more than 300 pence and have been given to the poor. And they murmured against her. Now look at verse 6. Jesus said, let her alone. Why trouble ye her? She hath wrought a good work on me. For ye have the poor with you always. And whensoever you will, you may do them good. But me, you have not always. She hath done what she could. She has come beforehand to anoint my body for burying. And verily I say unto you that wherever the gospel shall be preached throughout the whole world, this also that she hath done shall be spoken of for a memorial of her. We are kind because we may not have another opportunity. And then it will be too late. As a boy growing up, I used to hear my daddy use this expression. I thought it was a threat. When he said, there are people who are dead this hour who heard me preach the last sermon they ever heard. And I remember thinking, oh, Dad, what'd you do? Bore them to death? What happened? He always threatens to write me out of the will when I tell stuff like that. I said, you can't. I'm a lawyer. And I had not started preaching very long before it happened to me. And I know Jimmy Clark may be one of the finest preachers in this country, and he is aware of the immense responsibility that we all have every time we stand in that pulpit. Because there are people who may not live to see the next service, and we are the last sermon they ever hear. Same thing is true with regard to our kindness. We ought to be kind because we may not have another opportunity. You never know when it's going to be too late. In my work in law enforcement, 104 times, some of which took place when I was here in Limestone County, 104 times. Yes, ma'am, very sorry to have to inform you your son's been... Yes, sir, very sorry to have to inform you your daughter's been... 104 times I knocked on somebody's door to tell them that somebody in that house wasn't coming home. Somebody in that house wasn't coming home. And it was never a pleasant surprise. When you wake somebody up in the middle of the night, as I did in North Limestone County, myself and Alabama State Trooper Curtis Wright, a lady comes to the door. It's 4 o'clock in the morning. She opens the door. I'm standing there with a trooper. She knows it ain't good. There's a little bitty girl with her and a little boy, 12, 14 years old. I identified myself as a chaplain with the Limestone County Sheriff's Office. I said, we need to come in. She said, what's happened? I said, what relationship are you to so-and-so? She said, that's my husband. I said, I'm very sorry to have to inform you he's been killed in a truck accident. She began yelling and screaming. The boy took off running. The little girl just stood there staring at me. And she looked up at me after a few moments, and I knelt down beside her, and I said, sugar, do you understand what's happened? And she said, yes, sir, my daddy's dead, and he's never coming home. I said, yes, sugar, that's right. If there was anything I could do to change that, I would. And I tell you that because of the reality of time slipping away. It is a vapor. Life is a vapor that appears for a little while. And then it vanishes away. And you know what else vanishes away with it? The opportunity to be kind. I told you last time that on 2 occasions I've had doctors tell me I was not going to survive. When I was diagnosed with cancer in 1990, I sat down, I planned my own funeral with my family. 2002, my boss, the DA of Shelby County, came to see me at the hospital, came back to the courthouse, gathered everybody in the court, in the office together, and said, Gary's not going to make it. We're going to lose Gary. Well, I did make it. But I made my Lord a promise. And that is that nobody would get away from me without me telling them I love you. Am I right, Mabel? We talk on the phone all the time. And I never waste an opportunity to tell people like that that I love them. And I'm begging you to get in that same boat with me. Because you never know when you're going to lose that opportunity. And how many times have we had to go to that silent city of the dead and stand over a freshly covered grave and think, I wish I had told them I love them. I wish I had told them how much they mean to me. I wish I had told them how much I appreciate them. Well, we ought to be kind because we may lose that opportunity. I was in a meeting a number of years ago, and had said some things of this nature. And after services, a sweet little lady came up and she said, "I got a letter from my little boy. He's 60. And I wanted to show it to you." And it was a letter from her 60-year-old son telling her how much she meant to him. And she said, "I keep it in my Bible. I wouldn't trade it for nothing." Well, old Gary went home, and what do you reckon he did? Wrote his mama a letter. You never know. A number of years ago, a lady named Irma Bombeck wrote something, and I'll close with this. "One of these days you'll shout, 'Why don't you kids grow up and act your age?' And they will. Or, 'You guys go outside and find yourself something to do and don't slam the door.' And they won't. You'll straighten up the boys' bedroom neat and tidy, bumper stickers discarded, spread tucked and smooth, toys displayed on the shelves, hangers in the closet, animals caged, and you'll say out loud, 'Now, I want it to stay this way.' And it will. You'll prepare a perfect dinner with a salad that hasn't been picked to death and a cake with no fingerprints in the icing. And you'll say, 'Now, there's a meal fit for company.' And you'll eat it alone. You'll say, 'I want complete privacy on the phone. No dancing, no pantomimes, no demolition crews. Silence!' And you'll have it. No more plastic tablecloths stained with spaghetti. No more bedspreads to protect the sofa from damp bottoms. No more gates to stumble over at the top of the stairs. No more clothespins under the sofa. No more playpens to arrange a room around. No more anxious nights with a vaporizer tent. No more sand in the sheets or Popeye movies in the bathroom. No more iron-on patches or wet and knotted shoestrings or tight boots or rubber bands for ponytails. Imagine a lipstick with a point on it. No babysitter for New Year's Eve. Washing clothes only once a week. Eating a steak that isn't ground. Having your teeth cleaned without a baby on your lap. No PTA meetings, no carpools, no blaring radios, no one washing their hair at 11 o'clock at night. Having your own roll of transparent adhesive tape. Think about it. No more Christmas presents out of toothpicks and library paste. No more sloppy oatmeal kisses. No more tooth fairy. No giggles in the dark. No knees to heal. No responsibility. Only a voice crying, 'Why don't you grow up?' And the silence echoing, 'I did.' You may lose the opportunity." Now, in 30 seconds, I want to give you three ways to implement kindness. Number one, act on the impulse. It's what the lady did that washed his feet in Mark 14. Act on mail that card. Folks, I have got two bins of cards in my garage from 1990 I have every card everybody sent me, some of you, in 2002 when I had a stroke. I still have those cards. You cannot imagine the impact. Act on impulse. Number two, plan a surprise once a week. For some of you, that just may mean coming home in a good mood. That would be a surprise. But plan a surprise. In fact, I ought to put you under oath. I used to do this in a workshop I'd do. And I'd say, "Raise your right hand and repeat after me. I promise. Never to say. If there's anything I can do, let me know." Do they ever let you know? Jesus said, "Open your eyes. The fields are white under harvest." When I had cancer, my boys were all little bitty, and I heard the lawnmower running outside. We lived on a hill, and I was terrified because I said, "That mower's going to get away from them and cut one of their foot off." And I jumped up out of the bed, bandages and all, and looked out the window, and my two hunting buddies were out there cutting the yard. Nobody asked. Nobody called them and said, "Would you?" They just saw that the grass needed cutting, and they cut it. So how do you implement kindness? You act on impulse. You plan a surprise. Just write. Like I said a while ago, mail that card. Because when logic and wisdom fail, kindness will open the door. And that's why at the worship hour, we're going to talk about the ultimate kindness. Jesus, the friend of sinners.